Okay, we're beginning here, five lines down on the top of Ted Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara asks, "Ibayluhu, ain sham afar, mahu shitein efer." If there's no earth or dirt available to be used, if a person places ashes there, would that suffice to be mikayim the pasuk that you have to take mikarka hamishkan? Gemara says, "Aliba de Beit Shammai lo tibayluha." According to Beit Shammai, there's no question here. Damre lo matzinu efer shekaru yafar, because we know according to Beit Shammai that ashes do not have a status or are not subsumed under the category of afar. Ki dibay locha aliba de Beit Hillel. Question only arises according to Beit Hillel. Damre matzinu efer shekaru yafar, because we find by Beit Hillel that they do deem efer or ashes to be the same as using earth or dirt. My, what would the din be? The machloket of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai that the Gemara is referencing over here is with regards to kisui adam, the requirement that one cover over the blood of a chaya or an oaf, that has to be done with afar, with dirt or earth. The question is, if you have afer, does afer suffice to be considered kisui hadam? Beit Hillel believes that afer is subsumed under the category of afar. Therefore, if one does kisui adam with efer, then it works. On the other hand, Beit Shammai believes that efer is separate from afar and is not included under the category of afar. Therefore, if someone did kisui adam with efer, it would not work. The Tosfot Shatz over here quotes from the Rabbeinu Tam, who says that the Beit Shammai only believes that efer is not like afar when we're talking about items that were burnt aside from wood. If it's wood that is burnt, then Beit Shammai would agree that that afer, those ashes that are produced from the burning of the wood, would have the same category as a fire. His proof is from the Mishnah in the beginning of Beitzah, which says that afer kira muchanhu, that the ashes of the oven are considered to be good or muchan, ready to be used for kisui adam on Yom Tov, and they don't have a status of mukseh. And over there, it says, Kulam Modim. Everybody agrees. And Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are those that are arguing in the Mishnah over there. So based on that, Rabbeinu Tam wants to be mechalek between how the afer is produced. If you have ashes that are produced through wood, Beit Shammai would agree with Beit Hillel's position that that afer does have a status of afar. You're talking about burning of vegetation, food, or other items, then the question would arise as to whether that afer, those ashes that are produced there, have the same din as afar. On the other hand, the Tosfot Shatz rejects that position of the Rabbeinu Tam, and he brings Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah, that when the Mishnah says Kulam Modim, it's not referencing to the Efer Kira part of the Mishnah, but rather it's on the Dekar Na'utz, the fact that if there's a spade in the ground already, that is considered to be Mukhan, or usable dirt for the Kisui Hadam. On the other hand, with regards to Efer Kira, Beit Shammai will abide by their position and say that that is not considered to be afar, and it would not be good for Kisui Adam. So the Tosfot Shatz in the end says, if you follow that interpretation or reading of the Mishnah according to Rashi, then the Rabbeinu Tam's diuk out of the Mishnah and Beitza never comes about. And then you could say, according to Beit Shammai, that they wholly believe that Efer, that ashes are not considered to be afar. So the Gemara wants to know here, what is the halacha with regards to the usage of afer in place or in lieu of afar here? Avagav dikri afar, even though in general afer is called afar or subsumed under the category of afar, which we're going to see later on in the Gemara, comes out of the psukim by Parah Aduma, where it calls the ashes of the Parah Aduma afar, implying that afer is afar. Hacha bikarka mishkan k'tiv. Over here, it specifies particularly that it comes out of the floor of the Mishkan, meaning that you have to get earth or dirt that was found on the floor of the Mishkan. And therefore, Efer would not qualify. Odilma, hi, Bekarka Mishkan, the Isi ben Yehuda, the Isi ben Menachem hu da'ati. Or maybe the Karka Mishkan is not specifying that it must be earth that is from the floor of the Mishkan, rather for the Drashot that we saw in the Braita that we ended off the Gemara with yesterday, whether that means Karka Mishkan is a ribui to include other places besides the Mishkan and the Midbar that the karka would suffice, like in Beit Olamim, in the Beit HaMikdash, or Nov, in Givon, or according to Isi Ben Menachem, who Rashi thinks is parallel to the first braita that we brought, that you don't have to take the earth from the karka mishkan, but rather you can bring it from the outside and place it down. But you also may not just bring it from the outside, because you need karka hamishkan. And therefore they have an alternate drusha for the word karka mishkan, and then it's not available to say karka mishkan yes, efer no. So Mara wants to know, according to Beit Hillel, what is the halacha of efer in this instance? Tashma, dam Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Ishmael, shlosha mekomot, halacha ukevet mikra haTorah. That there are three places where the halacha, the interpretation of the pasuk, or more likely the halacha of Moshe Mitzinai, takes the pashtuta pasuk and undermines it completely. And as Rashi says over here, okevet comes from the word ekev, from one's heel, and it says that mekapechet rekvo mamadato, it shakes the foundation, undermines the normal or what have been the pashtut explanation of the pasuk, because of the halacha of Moshe Mitzinai. And we'll see in a second why that it is that he picked these three versus other places where we have Drashot Chachamim. Why in this instance does he believe that these are unique, the fact that the drasha undermines the pasuk completely? Others explain okevet over here, for like the word okefet, that means to go round or to circumscribe what would have been the normal explanation. Or others explain it based on this week's parsha, when Esav says about Yaakov, ve'yakveni ze pa'mayim, which is what the Oruch suggests the meaning of the word okevet is over here, as if it misled or engendered a misleading interpretation of the pasuk that we wouldn't have otherwise come to had you just read the pasuk. So now, what are these cases? Amra, the Torah says, be'afar, one must do kisui adam with afar, with earth, ba'alacha b'chol davar. And the halacha, Moshe Mitzinai, is that it can be with any item. Now, it's not exactly any item, but as Rashi points out over here, means hamegadel tzmachim. Anything that is fertile and could produce organic growth, then that item would be sufficient to be used in the covering of the dam, even though the Torah explicitly says afar. HaTorah amra batar, that by the nazir, the Torah says that one may not have a tar, a razor, on his head to cut his hair. Halacha b'chol davar. And the halacha Mishnah Mitzinai tells us that it's not just with a tar, with a razor, that he is restricted, but rather any type of instrument that removes his hair, or any removal of the hair, is improper with regard to the nazir. Torah amra sefer. When it comes to the writing of a get, a bill of divorce, the Torah specifies that it be a sefer, which would indicate that it has to be on parchment. Halacha b'chol davar. And again, halacha Moshe Mitzinai says that anything that detaches can be used if the writing can be seen on that item. And you can even use a leaf or bark and many other items that the Mishnah lists over there that are appropriate for the writing of a get. V'imita, if you are correct that the meaning of the word afar here includes efer as well, then why don't we lechashev nami hai? Then we should have enumerated or counted this item amongst the three that Rabbi Ishmael brought, that Rabbi Yochanan brought in the name of Rabbi Ishmael over here. Now, the three items that are listed here, as Rashi points out, are items by which the halacha of Moshe Mitzinai is the vehicle by which we undermine the pasuk. And that is because even though there are drashot that allow us to learn these items, nevertheless, as Rashi points out, Rabbi Shmuel does not subscribe to those drashot, or has an alternate drasha with that pasuk or that word, and therefore the words of the or the drashot are not available according to Rabbi Shmuel. And that means that for Rabbi Shmuel, these three items, it's the halacha Moshe Mitzinai that undermines the pashtut ta-pasuk, and that's why he enumerates them. Now, Rashi points out that the case of tar or razor by the nazir is not so simple. Because over there, it's not undermining the meaning of the pasuk, it's not changing the meaning of the pasuk, but rather including other items on top of it. It's saying not only is tar problematic, But other items as well are problematic in terms of the removal of the hair of the Nazir. And therefore, you might have thought, maybe that's not okarto. That's not undermining it. It's not changing the meaning. It's just expanding the meaning. Rashi rejects that and says, well, if that was the case, then you shouldn't get malkot. You should not get lashes for violating the pasuk in this way. And therefore, he believes that the meaning of the word tar has now been changed or, quote-unquote, undermined, and that's why you get malkot if you do it with other items, even though it's not a tar. And that's how Rashi resolves this issue of explaining why these aren't just simply tosefet, an addition up on the main item that's mentioned in the pasuk, but rather it's coming here to redefine the meaning of that word in the pasuk, or, and again, the way that we explain here is okevet or okarto. It undermines the simple meaning of the pasuk. Afterwards, in the Rashi, there is a quoted Yerushalmi, which is interesting because Rashi almost never, if ever, quotes the Yerushalmi, which would make it suspect over here. But nevertheless, when the Tosfos and the Tosfos Shans quoted, they quoted in the Perush HaKuntus that he quotes the Yerushalmi. Within that Yerushalmi, it says that the three items are not the three items that we mentioned here, but replaces Nazir with Marzeya, which is the requirement that an Eved Ivri, if he wants to stay until the Yovel with his master after he completes his first round of service, then he has to have his ear pierced. And over there, it makes it sound like you must use a Marzeya, which is an awl that's used for piercing the ear. And then the Mishnah in Kiddushin tells us that not only with that utensil, but all different types of tools you can use, whether it's a drill, a stylus, any many other items that you can use in order to pierce to the ear. So once again, it undermines the Pashtuta Pasuk through this Halacha Moshe Misinai. So despite the fact that the Torah specifies the awl, nevertheless, we learn that you can use many different utensils, including a stylus, a drill, other types of metallic utensils, according to one Dayot and according to other Dayot, any sharp object in order to pierce the ear, which once again seemingly undermines the simple meaning of the text. And Rashi, according at least the Rashi that we have here, favors that Girsa of the Yerushalmi because then it avoids this problem of the question by Nazir and Tar, and the explanation then would be that the third one is Marzeya and not Tar. So now the Gemara says if this list is the exhaustive list of cases like this, then it would imply that in our case, the Gemara believes, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shmuel believes that Afar is Afar and not Afer. Because otherwise it should have made this list where the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai teaches us that the word Afer will undermine the Pashtuta Pasuk, which means Afar. And as Rashi points out, we can't just say that Rabbi Shmuel believes that the definition of the word Afar subsumes within it the meaning Afer. Because you see that with regards to Kisui Adam, he considers that to be okay. That the explanation that Afer and other items are subsumed under Afar is indicative of the fact that he doesn't think that the word Afer is included. If that's the case over here as well, if we were going to include Afer, then that should have been amongst the list of items where the Torah changes the Pashtut, or the simple meaning of the text, from Afar to include Afer, just like it did by Kisui Adam. Now, Tosfot over here challenges that and says, Tema, Hechi Matzi L'Mishnah Matmi Rabbi Shmuel. How can you prove anything from Rabbi Shmuel over here? Vasvir Leik Beit Shammai, De Afer Lo Ikrei Afar. Says that, how can you prove anything from Rabbi Shmuel over here? He holds like Beit Shammai, and Beit Shammai believes that Afer is not subsumed in Afar, and that's why he doesn't enumerate it over here. But our question is within the Shita of Beit Hillel. And so therefore, Rabbi Shmuel's statements over here don't prove to us anything about Beit Hillel. They just prove that he holds like Beit Shammai. Tosvot leaves it as a tema, suggesting that, unlike what Rashi says over here, that Rabbi Shmuel is speaking within the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael, and explaining that the word Afar does not automatically include the word Afer, even according to Beit Hillel, or even if it did include the word Afer in the word Afar, you would still need the riboy to include other items that are migagdel tzmachim, that include that, and therefore that's why kisui afar is mentioned over here. And the absence of the mention of the afar by the sota is indicative of the fact that he does not think that Afer is subsumed in that word or included in that word. Otherwise, it would also undermine the meaning of the Pashtut of Pasuk. Whereas Tosafot sees this as evidence of the fact that Rabbi Shmuel is actually holding like Beit Shammai. And the reason that he needs a riboy by Kisui Adam is because Afer is not included in Afar, unlike what Beit Hillel believes, that Afer is subsumed under Afar. And therefore Tosafot says he's not sure what the Gemara's conclusion is here based on Rabbi Shmuel, because the absence of Afar here, according to Rabbi Ishmael, is not evidence of what Beit Hillel would say, because according to Beit Shammai, you need a specific ribui. But according to Beit Hillel, the word Afar or Karka already concludes within it, or subsumes within it, the meaning Afer. And therefore, maybe the absence here is because it doesn't change the meaning of the Pasuk, because that is the Pashtut meaning of the Pasuk, that is, Afer is subsumed within under Afar. Therefore, Tosfot does not completely understand why the Gemara is using Rabbi Shmuel as the premise for the question here, seeing that he holds like Beit Shammai, whereas Rashi and many of the other Rishonim think that Rabbi Shmuel subscribes to the position of Beit Hillel. But it's obvious from the Drasha that the fact that he's including Afer under Afar, even though it comes through this quote-unquote Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai, is evidence of the fact that he must be holding like Beit Hillel, because according to Beit Shammai, Afer is never subsumed under Afar, unless, of course, you subscribe to that position of the Rabbeinu Tam that we mentioned before. But even according to Beit Hillel, they agree that the Pashtut of the meaning Afar is not defined as Afer, but rather it's through the Drosha from Paraduma that we know that Afar includes Afer, and that is another example of where we are undermining the meaning of the Pasuk. And others still suggest that even if you would agree that Afer is subsumed under Afar like Beit Hillel, you would still need a ribui over here, or the Pasuk is undermining the simple explanation because you're including more items, not just Afer, you're including all these other items that will grow or are fertile, and therefore it does undermine the meaning of the Pasuk. But again, according to them, it would be harder to prove from Rabbi Ishmael as to whether Afer is included in Afar or not, because, like Tosafot, they believe that Beit Hillel thinks that the word Afar does include the word Afer. Gemara says, Haitana Bishir, that this list is not exhaustive, and that there were other items that were left out of this list. Tosafot asks on that, how can you say there are things left out of a list if the Tana gives you a number? Here, Rabbi Yochanan says in Rabbi Shmuel, there are three items. How can you say that he's giving you a non-exhaustive list when he gives you a total number of what he's trying to enumerate over here? So Tosafot, and then more extensively in the Tosafot, the Ashantz brings a example throughout Shas where we have Mishnayot with numbers or Tanaic works with numbers, and yet the Gemara still says Tana Vishir. There are a couple of places where the Gemara says, well, if it has a number, you can't say Tana Vishir. There the Tosafot Shantz explains that those are exceptions to the rule, because over there it's clear that the Tana is enumerating, or the number is the end game or objective of the Tana, and therefore you can't say Tana Vishir. But over here, we could say Tana Vishir despite the fact that it has a number here. My Shir, Dai Shir, what other items that were left out of this list that you want to say that this was left out of the list? Shir Mitzora. He left out the case of Mitzora, Titania. That's a general statement. So we saw this pasuk in Nazir and the Limudim that came out of it between Nazir and Mitzora. Then it specifies where you have to shave his head, his beard, his eyebrows, prat. It gives you details. Vet kol sero yigaleach. Again, the pasuk closes with a general statement of all of his hair. Chazar uchlal. And therefore you have what is otherwise known as a klal uprat uchlal, which is one of the shlosh esrei midot that Rabbi Shmuel is dorish the Torah. Iatadan el ke'ena prat. When you have this setup of a general, a particular, and then a general, then what it tells us to do is include anything that is similar in nature to the prat, to the items that are specified there. And what are the character traits of the prat? Ma'prat mifurash, makom kinus se'ar, vinireh. Just like by the prat, these are areas where the hair is gathered and is visible. Avkom makom kinus se'ar, vinireh. So too, We will include any area where the hair is gathered together and is visible. So my Rabbi. So what did you include here? Rabbi Se'ar Haraglaim, which is a euphemistic way of saying the pubic hair. My Miyait de Bet Hashechi. It excluded the hair that is found under the arm, in the armpit. Udekuli Gufe, and the remainder of his body, like on his legs, on his arms, there it would not be required to be shaved because it's not a place of kinus se'ar, where hair is gathered together. V'hilchata, despite that fact, Allah is migaleach chedlat, that he shaves himself off like a gourd, meaning he completely shaves his body and leaves no hair at all, despite the fact that we have a drasha from the pasuk indicating otherwise. So once again here, we have Allah l'moshe misinai, which is undermining the interpretation of the pasuk, because it says that the Mishnah says, balo lahakif et mitzora, when he comes to shave the mitzora, mavir tar al kol b'saro, takes a razor over his entire body. Uchtani seifa, and it says in the latter half of that Mishnah, uveyom ha-shvi'i migalcho tiklachat shnia ki tiklachat rishona. When it comes to the second shaving of the mitzora, where we have this klal uprata klal, he does it identical to the way it was stated in the first shaving, which means that he completely shaves him and ignores the fact that we have this klal upratu klal. So you see here, we have another example from Mitzora, where the simple interpretation of the pasuk, it's not so simple, but it is one of the Shlosh Esrei Midot, that klal upratu klal would have led us to the conclusion that a Mitzora, in his second shaving, should not have to shave the entirety of his body, but rather only areas where the hair is visible and it gathers together naturally in those areas. Whereas the Mishnah tells us that in the second Giluach, that is, he does a Giluach on the first day and then on the seventh day, that one that's done on the seventh day is exactly or identical to the one done on the first day. And there he does, Bigaleach Kol Se'aro. He cuts everything off. He completely removes all the hair of his body. So once again, we have Halacha the Moshe Misinai that suggests that the simple interpretation or the way that we would have normally interpreted the Pasuk is being undermined by that interpretation. So that is one of the items that's left out of Rabbi Shmuel's list. And so too, sota, or karkas sota, the afar that's mentioned here, is also left out of the list, and therefore we have no evidence from Rabbi Shmuel as to whether afar is subsumed under afar or not. Amar Rav Yochanan bar Yitzchak, that's not an exception to Rabbi Shmuel's principle, because ki kachoshiv alocha okevet mikra. That the only time that Rabbi Shmuel lists something is when the Halacha l'Moshe Misinai undermines the pashtuta pasuk. Ha, okevet midrabananhi. Over here, it is undermining a rabbinic understanding of the pasuk. Now, this is a strange use of the word midrabanan, because here we're using one of the shlosh esrei midot, shatorah nidreshet behem. And especially according to the Rambam, that means that whatever is darshan out of here is a din deoraita, and it's as if it's written bekatuf. And so then, what is he saying here? That it's an undermining of a din derabanan. This might be supportive of those that understand that when the Rambam uses the term midivrei sofrim, it doesn't literally mean divrei sofrim, meaning rabbinic in nature, but divrei sofrim is when we invoke or engage one of the principles of the Shlosh Esrei Midot, that even though that is a din d'oraita, it's termed derabanan because there's element of drasha or quote-unquote, human intervention to get to the right interpretation of the pasuk. And therefore, he terms this klal upratu klal to mean that that's something derabanan. Or, because of this problem, the Ritz Chayot actually tries to change the girsa to say drash instead of midrabanan, which would actually still create the distinction between the previous three items where they're changing the pashtula pasuk. Because over here, where you're trying to change a drash on the pasuk, but at least it moves it up to a deraita level. It's a terminology that you would express or use with regards to the Shlosh Esrei Midot rather than something called derabanan. Whereas the Sfat Emet over here notes that midrabanan means literally midrabanan. The requirement to shave the entire body clean is a din derabanan. And so now you're having a din derabanan that is oker, the pashtul, ta pasuk, which says you don't have to shave everything. But that's not the typology that Rabbi Shmuel is trying to describe over here, where there's a halacha l'moshe misinai that undermines the pashtuta pasuk. And for that reason, mitzora is not considered to be left out of the list. And again, if mitzora is not left out of the list, then it's more questionable to say that there's only one thing left out of the list, and that is sota. Rav Papa amar, ki kachoshiv halacha okevet ve'okeret. Ha okevet umosefet hi. That the enumeration Rabbi Shmuel's list are items in which there is a Pashtura Pasuk, and then the Lacha Moshe Misinai undermines completely the meaning. On the other hand, here, by the Mitzorah, doesn't undermine the meaning of the Pasuk, or the interpretation through the Klal Ubratu Klal, but rather extends it. It's Mosefet. The same problem that Rashi noted with regards to the Tar by the Nazir, it's not replacing or completely undermining the interpretation, it's expanding the meaning of the word in that case, or what the restriction is. And so to over here, by the Mitzorah, he has to cut off here. All the Akira does is make him cut off more here than he would have cut off before, but doesn't change the fact that the core meaning is based on the Klal Ubratu Klal, to remove certain types of hair. You'll do that, but you do more than that. You'll add on more hair. And that's why Mitzorah is not included in the list, because it's different. Again, it doesn't match the typology of the other items listed over here. And again, then if Mitzorah is not left out of the list, then it's harder just to say that Sota is the only thing left out of the list. Ravashi Amar Ha Matnita Mani. Wait a minute, you're mixing and matching opinions over here. This Braita that we mentioned before, that darshins the Klal Upratu Klal to tell you the limitations or the areas of hair that need to be removed from the body of the Mitzorah, who is that authored by? That's authored by Rabbi Ishmael, who, as Rashi notes, follows the position or the method of Drasha of Rabbi Chunya ben Akana, who uses Klal Upratu Klal as his method for being Doresh the Torah. And that's why that Braita is authored by Rabbi Shmuel with his Doresh Klal Uprat. And that's why Kedilat Mani, on the other hand, the Mishnah that says that you have to shave off the hair clean and you don't leave any hair off of that, that is authored by Rabbi Akiva he. And as Rashi points out, Rabbi Akiva was a Talmud of Nachum Ish Gamzu, who is Doresh the Torah by the method of Riboy Umiut, which would lead to a different conclusion. And therefore, you're asking a question or a stira between a Braita and a Mishnah, where the Braita seems to indicate that there's a limitation on the amount of hair that needs to be removed. And there's a Mishnah that says you move everything. And based on that, you say, well, Mitzorah should be included in this list because it's Oker. He says, you're mixing apples and oranges. You bring a Braita that's authored by Rabbi Shmuel, who darshins Klal Uprat. And you bring a Mishnah that's authored by Rabbi Akiva, who darshins Riboy Umiut. And the conclusions over there are different because they have different methods of drasha, but not a stira between them. It's not undermining. According to Rabbi Shmuel, that remains the din. And according to Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, that's the din. And Rabbi Shmuel will never subscribe to that position in the Mishnah because that's a different method of drasha. The Tanya, we have a Braita. Vaya b'yom ha-shvi yigalach et kol se'aro. The seventh day, he will cut all of his hair. Riba. Et rosho, vet zgano, vet gabot enav, miyet, vet kol se'aro, yigaleach, hazar v'riba, riba umiyet uriba. So the methodology we use here, as opposed to the way that we did it before, in the Braita of Klal Upratu Klal, is riboy miyot to riboy, riba kol. In the case of riba miyot to riba, you include everything. My riba, riba de kule gufe. That means everything on the body has to be shaved off. Umay miyet. So then what is excluded? In the case of Riboy Miut Uriba, you include everything, and then you take out very small items through the Miutim that are mentioned there. Miut Sear Shibitocha Chotem. You leave out the hair that's inside the nostrils, then you don't have to take that off, and that's excluded from the Miut that's there. In general, Riboy Miut Uriba, as we mentioned in the past, when we contrasted the two methods of Drasha, is much more inclusive than that of Klal Upratu Klal. It's usually, I'll call it a step ahead. And therefore, Klal Upratu Klal looks at the prat over here is defining the inclusionary nature of the klal. And the prat tells you that if you have similar character traits to the prat, then you'll be included. On the other hand, by riboy, miot, or riba, you include everything. That makes everything's included. The miot will exclude things that are far-fetched or don't really fit in or seemingly are in the far reaches of what you would have possibly included. And over here, they're mimayate the hair that's inside of the nostrils. But based on that, the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, who uses this method of drasha of riboy miyot to riba. And that's why the Mishnah says you shave the entire body in the second shaving. Whereas the Braita that we brought is Rabbi Ishmael, who believes klal upratu klal. And therefore, you only shave the hair that is visible and in areas where it's gathered. And there's no stira between the Mishnah and the Braita, or the Mishnah doesn't come to undermine the Braita. It's actually two different opinions. So then, once again, Rabbi Tzora does not belong in that list of Rabbi Shmuel because you don't even have an example of a halacha where you have one meaning and then we undermine that meaning. Over here, each one is interpreting the pasuk based on their method of drasha, and so they come to a different conclusion. But the two conclusions are separate. They have nothing to do with each other. So once again, if Mitzora is not in the list, then just saying that Sota is excluded from the list doesn't make so much sense. So my Haviyala. So then what is the conclusion here based on this? What's the halachic conclusion? And the Tosfot asks a basic question that based on the previous Gemara where we brought the proof from Rabbi Ishmael, in the end where we found that Mitzora was not left out of the list, then we should have concluded that Sota was intentionally left out of the list. If that's the case, then Afer should not be subsumed under Afar, and we should have been able to bring a conclusion from that. So why is the Gemara asking over here, my Havi Allah? So Tosfot says, Veish Lamar, Deloit Berla, Hai Dishiara. Why did Rabbi Shmuel leave it out of the list? There are two possibilities of why Rabbi Shmuel left it out of the list. The answer might be is that we don't know why Rabbi Shmuel left it out. Did he leave it out intentionally, and it's left out to prove to us that Afer is not like Afar? Or maybe it's left out because Afar includes in its definition the word Afer. And the reason he left it out is because that's not a case where it undermines the core meaning of the word, because Afar includes Afer. By Kisui Adam, he doesn't say that. That is because by Kisui Adam, he's not only including Afer, he's including other items under the word Afar, and that's what makes it that he undermined the simple interpretation of the Pasuk. So therefore, from Rabbi Shmuel, we can't bring a conclusion as to what the halacha is, because we're not exactly sure why he left it out of the list. Whether it's because it's not a part of this list, and therefore Afer is not under Afar, or it's because Afer is subsumed under Afar, and if that's the case, he didn't need to bring it in the list, because that is the simple interpretation of the Pasuk. And that's why the Gemara now queries, my Havi Allah, what is the halacha conclusion? Is Afer included within or subsumed under Afar for the Mei Sota? So Tashma, Dam Rav Huna Barash Yamarav, Ein Sham Afar. If there is no earth or dirt that's there under that stone in the Migdash, Mevi Rak Puvit Yorek, you bring the compost or decomposition of vegetation or food, Umikadesh, and then you are Mikadeshit. Now that's interesting use of the word Mikadesh, because here by the Sota, there's no Inyana being Mikadesh. You put the Afar into the water, and that's part of the procedure, but you're not, quote-unquote, Mikadesh, the water. So either you have to say that the Mikadesh over here is a borrowed term, it's a terminology that's used by the Afer Para, where when placing the ashes of the Para into the water, it is Mikadesh, the water. And so then they use the same verb, which is used by Afer Para, where it has meaning in terms of Kiddush, and then that becomes the terminology that's used anytime you place Afar or something else, foreign object into water, you're going to call it Mikadesh. Maybe that's why they use the word here. Then Rashi gives meaning to it and says, Umikadesh. Mikadesh doesn't mean to place it in the water, but rather means to place it on the floor of the Mishkan or the floor of the Mikdash, to be Mikadeshit, so that now it's part of the Karka Mishkan, and then you can utilize it to put it in the water, and that's what's meant by the word Mikadesh over here. And then in the Girsa of Argamar, we say Velohi, and that's not the case. You can't be Medayik Hachi. Rashi over here takes out and says Velo Goros, Velohi. You can't put in the Girsa of Lohi, and the Tosfot Shatz explains why that's the case, because normally when the Gemara says, my Havi Allah, what is the din here, and brings it Tashma, it's bringing something that's conclusive as evidence. And therefore, the word Velohi would not belong here, because that would then say we brought evidence through the Tashma, and now we're rejecting that evidence. So therefore, the word Velohi would be inappropriate in this context. But the Tosfot Shatz makes a note that that is not a ironclad rule or steadfast rule, that any time the Gemara says my Havi Allah and brings a tashma, that it never undermines or backs away from that position. There are a minority of places where that's true, and therefore he says based on that he would not erase the girsa of Velohi, and therefore the Gemara's conclusion would be Velohi, you can't prove anything from this memra, because rakbuvit yorek hu dahave afar. What we can say here is that the decomposition of the vegetation or composting of those items, that havei afar, that is considered to be dirt or earth. Afer, lo havei afar. On the other hand, ashes would not be included, meaning that all it tells us is about that specific item, doesn't tell you more broadly that afer is included in afar. So based on whether, if you have the girsa of Elohi, then it would be more inconclusive. The Gemara does not have a final conclusion. Whereas according to Rashi, the Gemara concluded here that Afer is subsumed under Afar for the Sota. Tarabanan, Kadesh Yireh Al HaMayim. So he said before that he has to put in sufficient amount of dirt, earth, from the ground of the Mishkan, that it should be visible in the water. Tarabanan, shlosha tzrichim shir'u. There are three items that have to be visible, meaning a similar type of setup where you're placing an object into water and they have to be visible in the water. One is afar sota, our case over here. The other one is efer para. That is when you're taking the ashes of the para and you're placing them into the mayim chayim, into the live spring water, that they have to be visible. And the last one is rok yivama. When the yivama spits, it says there that she has to do it, the ne'a zekinim, to the eyes or the visibility of the zekinim. And so they have to see the spittle that leaves her mouth. It has to be visible to them. So those are three examples. The Gemara says, Umishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, Af Dam Tzipor. Rabbi Shmuel includes a fourth item, which is the blood of the Tzipor, and that is in the Tarat HaMitzora, in the first day of his process of Tara, where he shechs one bird, and then allows the Dam to go into the water, and then dips the other bird into that water and Dam and sets it free. Rabbi Shmuel says over here, the Dam that goes into that water, that Dam must be visible. The Dinim here, which say that things have to be visible, even though they all have the same din that they must be visible, they might derive from a different reason. And that is by the sota, the mei sota, and as well as the efer para, the visibility is setting the shiur of the item that is being placed in there, which is that the afar or the efer that's placed in there must be sufficient so that it's not completely dissolved in the item, but can be seen floating on the top of the water. Whereas by the spitting of the woman, the visibility there is not about the size of the spittle, but just the fact that the spittle must be visible when she does spit, and not that it's giving some sort of shiur of measurement to the size of the spittle, only the requirement that it be visible. And same by the Dam at Tzipor, it's not telling you the shiur of the Dam at Tzipor that you need to put in, but rather, it's telling you that the Dam at Tzipor must be visible once it's in the water. And that's why Rabbi Shmuel is so focused on the fact that the dam must be visible inside of the water, because it's more akin to the case of the yevama, where it's not giving you a minimum shiur, but rather telling you the nature of what must transpire over here. There must be spit that is visible. There must be dam that is visible. Whereas by the cases of the ashes and the dirt, it's actually giving you the minimum amount of ashes or dirt that must be placed in there that will make them visible. That might be actually the machloket here between Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim as to whether Dam at Tzipor should be included in this list. According to Rabbi Shmuel, Dam at Tzipor is similar to the Yevama, that it must be visible. Whereas for the Chachamim, since the Torah gives no shiur to the Dam, that means that it doesn't have to be visible, because they're looking more along the lines of the ashes and the dirt, where if it doesn't give you a shiur, then it also doesn't have to be visible. And that might be the core machlok between Rabbi Shmuel and Chachamim, as whether the Dam at Tzipor looks more like the Efer Hapara and the Afar Chatat. That's what the Chachamim would say. And therefore, since the Dam at Tzipor does not have that requirement, therefore it does not need to be visible. Whereas for Rabbi Shmuel, it's more similar to the spit of the Yevama, which is that it must be visible, not because it's defining the Shiur, but that is the definition of Dam in the Mayim, is something that is visible. So when it says, my taimo de Rabbi Ishmael, what's the reasoning behind Rabbi Ishmael? And obviously, what's the reason of the Tanakama or the Chachamim that they don't agree with Rabbi Ishmael? Dichtiv, because it says, v'tavalotam b'dam atzipur. And when you dip, after you've shechted the bird and the blood has gone into the water, then you take the eight erez, the shnitolat, the ezov, and the live bird, and you dip them into the water. In describing that dipping process, it says, Vitaval utam bidam hatzipur. It says that you will dip them into the blood of the tzipur, implying that the dam that is in the water is still called dam hatzipur, or that there's visible dam hatzipur there. As the pasuk says, it's tzipur achaya, ikach utavet itzaeres, vetchni otolat, veta izov, vitaval utam veta tzipur achaya, bidam hatzipur shkuta alamayim achayim. So you see that it's still called dam hatzipur even after it is in the water. Vitanya, bidam, Yochol b'dam v'lo b'mayim. So it sounds from over here that you place it into the blood and not into the water. Talmud Lomar, the pasuk says, ha-mayim, there's no b'mayim in the pasuk, but ha-mayim. E-mayim, if you're dipping in the water, yochol b'mayim v'lo b'dam, you would think it's in the water and not in the blood. Talmud Lomar b'dam, that has to be in the dam. Ha-ketzad, how do I resolve this seeming contradiction that it tells you to dip it in the blood and dip it into the water? Mevi mayim, shedam tzipor nikar ben. You bring the water in which the Dama Tzipor is visible. The Kamal, and how much is that? Revi'it. So based on this, Rabbi Shmuel sets the volume of water that you use as revi'it of water, because within a revi'it of water, the Dama Tzipor will be visible. Now, as Tosfot points out, it's not simply that it is visible, but that there's mamashut, that there's actual blood in the water. It's not simply that the blood is coloring the water red, but actually you can see, or there is blood in there that is visible in a substantial or substance manner, not simply in the discoloration of the water. Rabbanon, what do the Rabbanon do with this? How do gufe? They need this for the simple interpretation of the pasuk. Tahachikam arachmana. This is what the pasuk says. At bil bidam ubemayim. Dip it into the water and the blood. So that you don't just think you have to dip it into one of them, you have to dip it into both of them together. Rabbi Shmuel, im ken lichtov rachmana vataval behem. That you should dip it into them. Bedam ubamayim lomali. So then why does it specify individually the dam and the mayim? The nikar, to tell you that it has to be visible, the blood inside of the water. Rabbanan, ikatav rachmana, the pasuk that I just said, vataval behem, that you dip it into them, havamina, haiduchudei, vahaiduchudei. That you can dip into each one separately. Dip it into the blood by itself, dip it into the water by itself, and you would have accomplished what the pasuk is asking of you, because it says behem. Ktav rachmana, bidam, ubamayim, it really should be bedam, umayim. It says that it brings down the word mayim and dam separately to teach you that you have to get into both of them simultaneously. And that teaches you the arvan, to mix them together. But Ishmael, the arvan, krach rinaktiv. I don't need that pasuk to teach me that you mix the blood and the water together, because I have another pasuk that tells me about the process that is done here, or what you do to the birds. It says, b'tziva kwein, shachat tzipor achat, el kli cheres, al mayim chayim. That you shecht the bird into the water. Well, if you shecht the bird into the water, it's obvious that the blood is going to get mixed with the water. Rabbanan say, well, imiahu, for that pasuk, havamina, ishchatei, samuch lamano, that you just have to shecht it near the utensil that is holding the water, v'nitinu livridim, and then you squeeze the veins to not allow the blood to flow out, or the kabbalah de dam b'manachrina, and then you'll have that blood collected in a different utensil, and then you could dip them in the water, and then in the blood separately. Kamash Malon, the pasuk teaches us here, Laravan, to mix them together. So therefore the Chachamim don't have any extraneous room to learn the fact that Rabbi Shmuel's limud, which is Rabbi Shmuel believes that you have to have dam nikar b'mayim, and that's because he believes that you could have either written b'hem, and therefore bidam u'b'mayim is extraneous, and the Chachamim say that's not extraneous because that teaches you they have to be together. Rabbi Shmuel says, I can learn together from the previous pasuk. The Chachamim said the previous pasuk still doesn't tell me together. It just tells me you have to shecht it near the water. It doesn't tell me you shecht and have the blood go into the water. So based on that machloket, they conclude in their respective positions as to whether you need to have dam nikar b'mayim or not. Rabbi Shmuel says, yes. The Rabbanan say, no. So b'minei Rabbi Yirmiyah b'Rabbi Zeira. So Rabbi Yirmiyah queries from Rabbi Zeira, g'dola umadechet et ha'mayim, ktana v'nitchet b'mei ha'mayim. How do you know that a revi'it mayim is the proper amount? If you have a very large bird, then the blood will overwhelm the revi'it mayim there, and then the mayim won't exist anymore. Or, if you have a very small bird, then the revi'it adam here will subsume the blood in it, and then you won't see the blood in it. How can you give a standard shiur of revi'it mayim over here? Because it doesn't seem that it would work. Mahu, what would be the din then? Amalei, lava mina dacha. Haven't I told you on other occasions, lo tapik nafshech the bar mihilchata? Don't question the shi'urim of the chachamim. When the chachamim give shi'urim, they either have a mesorah with regards to this, or they've done an empirical studies about it, and they now come to this conclusion, but they're not just arbitrary measurements that the chachamim are putting in place. When they put it in place, it's done with forethought, and whether that's just a halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, it's a mesorah, or it's empirically determined, you shouldn't question the shirim of the chachamim, because that's not going to lead you to a proper conclusion, or you're basically challenging the chachamim in a place where there is no room for challenge, because the tzipor drawer, shiru rabbanan, the chachamim checked with a tzipor drawer, which is a sparrow, ein lecha gdola shmedechet et ha'mayim, and when they measured with a large sparrow, said, ein lecha gdola shmedechet et ha'mayim, there's no bird that's big enough that blood would overwhelm the water that was there. and there's no one that is small enough that it would be overwhelmed by the water that was there. So therefore, the Chachamim have an empirical level of Revi'it Mayim by which they make this determination that that will be the type of water where the dam will be nikar bahem. As Tosfos points out, this question of Rabbi Yirmiyah is not a question according to the Shita of the Chachamim or a Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, but it's a more generic question about the Shiurim of the Chachamim. How can they give an objective Shiur here when it's a very subjective manner? And Rabbi Zera says back to him, don't question the Chachamim, because when they give an objective Shiur, it's a well-thought-out Shiur. It's not simply an arbitrary number that they are giving. And therefore, he's querying against Rabbi Shmuel's statement that it's a Revi Adam objectively. And Rabbi Zera's response is, it's not an arbitrary number, but rather it's a well-thought-out position. Tanurbanan, Higdim Afar L'mayim, Pasul. If you put in the earth or dirt before the water, it's Pasul. Rabbi Shimon Makshir, and Rabbi Shimon says that it is fine. So here you have a machloket as to the order in which the Afar is placed into the water. According to Rabbi Shimon, even if it's done out of order where the Afar is there, and then the water is poured on top of it, it's fine. According to the Tanna Kamma, it must be done in the proper order, which is that the water is there first and the Afar put on top. My time with Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Dichtiv. It says, L'chule tamei me Afar srifat ha-chatat. So it says here that you're going to take from the tamei, from the earth or dirt, that is from the burning of the chatat. Now the burning of chatat should produce afer, and that's what it's called, the afer parah. Yet the Torah still designates it or calls it afar. Why is it calling it afar if it's afer? Betanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon. V'che afar hu? It's not afar. Halo afer hu? Shinak tu v'mashma o l'done menu gzer shava. The Torah changed its language in order to provide the opportunity to learn gzer shava. Nemrakan afar, it says by the srefata chatat, or by the paraduma, the word afar, even though it shouldn't be there. Nemralahalan afar, and it says by the sota, the word afar. So malahalan afar agabimayim, just like by the sota, it seems that the chatkhila, the dirt, should go into the water. Afkan afar agabimayim, so too by the paraduma, that is the primary way, or the way that we'd prefer that you did it. Umakan, here by the paraduma, higdim afar the mayim kasher. He puts in the dirt or the earth first. It works. Afalan higdim afar the mayim kasher. So too by the sota, through this gzeir shover, we're going to say that if he puts in the earth or the dirt into the utensil first and then the water, it'll be kasher. And Gemara's obvious question is, vahata minolan. By sota, it's obvious that v'chatchila, that should be the case, because that's the way that it's described in the Torah, which is v'kach ha'koyim mayim k'toshim kli charis min afar ha'shev yakach ha'mishkani kach ha'koyim natan el hamayim. So there it's clear that he's placing the afar into the water. But the other limud, which is that by parah duma, it allows you to do the reverse and still kasher, where does that come from in the psukim? So the Gemara says, v'hata min alin trei kroi k'tive. There are two psukim written there. K'tiv alav. It says there that you place it on it. Alma efer beresha. That it seems from that that you're putting the ashes there at first. Uchtiv mayim chayim el keli. On the other hand, it says that you place the water or the live spring water into the kli. Alma mayim beresha. That makes it sound like the water is in the utensil first. So from the pasuk itself, where it says v'natan alav mayim chayim el keli, alav seems to indicate and referencing back to the ashes, which means natan alav mayim chayim means that you're putting the mayim chayim onto the ashes. On the other hand, by describing the mayim chayim, the live spring water, as being el keli into the utensil, it makes it sound like that's the only thing in the utensil now, which means that the water is there first. Hakeitzad, how does that work? Ratzah zenotain, ratzah nazenotain. From that, it would be inconclusive. You could do it either way. You could put the water first, or you could put the ashes first. The pasuk doesn't give you any direction. Now, with the gzir shava connecting us to sota, we would then favor putting in the water first and then the afer para. But similarly to by the case of para duma, where it would be kasher if you did it in reverse, so too by the sota, if you do it in reverse, it would be kasher. Rabbanan say that we don't accept that because it says el keli, dafka alav larvan. El keli is literal. We'll take the fact that the water is going into the kli to be the literal interpretation of that pasuk by the para duma. And therefore, water goes first. What about the fact that it says alav? That it seems like you're putting the water on the ashes. Alav just tells you have to mix them well. Veima, so Gemara says, how do you know that that's the right interpretation? Say the other way around, that alav dafka. Alav means that you place the water on top of the ashes. That will take literally. And El Keli should take Chiyutan Mikli. And from El Keli, we'll have a drosha, which tells you that the live spring water must go into the Kli in which you're going to be Mikadesh the Efer HaChatat. Not that you fill up a Kli with the live spring water and then pour from that Kli into a second Kli. It's got to be the Kli Rishon, the first Kli that captured the live spring water. Inside of that Kli, you must paint the Efer HaChatat. So you have that drasha, and we'll take the word alav literally, and that would indicate that mayim goes in after the Efer HaChatat, or on top of the Efer HaChatat. It says, Mematzinu b'chol makom. Where do we find everywhere else? Makshir lamala, avkan makshir lamala. Everywhere else where we find that the makshir, or the specific item that has been processed here, in order to go through the process of tahara, that item goes on top. And that the mayim, or the water, is the base, which is what we find by the damatzipor of the mitzora, which is also what we find by the sota, that it seems to indicate that the dirt goes on top. So two over here, when we have a choice of how to interpret the pasuk, we're going to do it in the way or the structure by which many other psukim or processes in the Torah are laid out, which is that the water is the base, and then you put the makshir on top. And therefore, we're going to take literally the mayim chayim el keli, which is that the water has to be the first thing into the kli, and the ashes go on top. And the alav, we're going to take as a drasha to teach us that they have to mix the ashes well into the water. The Tosfot over here points out that Shimon's drasha of the fact that there's this extraneous word afar that allows you to make the gzer shava is somewhat problematic because Beit Hillel learns from that change from Afer to afar that Afer is subsumed in afar. So if that's the case, then it's not available for the gzer shava. So Tosfot in the end says, Ishlamar tarte shmamina, that you can learn both things from this word. Because, first of all, you have the change from Afer to Afar. But then, the specific word Afar that you chose to change it to, that's what allows you to make the Gzer Shava. And therefore, you can garner both Limudim from there. In addition, okay, we're going to stop here by the bottom of Tetzayin Amud Bet.